We're talking to Chance Farrar. Did I pronounce that right? I was going to ask you that because we say at home, we say Farrar.
Yeah, Farrar.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have some other friends that have the same spelling. Yeah, the Farrar.
I think they're missing an R, but.
Oh, is that Farrar's, right? Okay. Yeah, we call them Far.
Yeah, but. We always like Ferrari without the E. You
know, nice. Oh, I like that. I like that association. But you are the man, the myth, the legend. I told my boys, my oldest boys, probably months ago, it's like, man, I want to have Chance on. It was right after Kennedy and Cannon won the state championship. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, we got to have them on. I wanted to have them all three of you guys on and talk about the whole experience and things like that. But my boys idolize you. So thank you for being such a stud.
Well, I'll tell you what, you have great boys. And I always, you know, I don't want to go too far down this road, but I really think that, you know, the only thing that we give to this world really, I think, is what we pass on is our kids. And when families have good kids, it speaks to the parents 100%. It's almost impossible for the kids to be on the level of your boys without you guys just being great people. So I love it. Great families, great community.
And so I love that you brought that out. I think, I agree with you. I've often said that, like, because we're in the business as estate planning attorneys of passing things on. It's usually stuff. And the more I've done this over time, you know, for a couple decades now. And so it's like, ultimately, it's just stuff. You can't take it with you. And I've often thought, like, well, what is the mark that I want to leave on this world? Because we're only here for a short time. And then what? Like, are people even going to remember you or your name or whatever? So how do you do that? And the conclusion I've come up with is that, like, it's going to be our posterity, our kids. And that's a real crapshoot. Because you don't know how those kids are going to act.
Right. It's not, you're right. How they become isn't always a result of the parents, right? They have to make choices as adults, and we all do. But I was with you, you know, the legacy, because I don't feel we have a legacy as people, you know, whether they remember us or not, but really our children are our legacy. And I, you know, kind of that's how I see it. But I think you said a very similar point.
Yeah. I agree. I think to that end, so tell me about, you're wearing this shirt. Why?
Yuma Fight League.
YFL. Yeah, Yuma Fight League. So tell me about this, because I saw your flyers here. You've got an event coming up. What is this? The Saturday, right?
Correct. The August 2nd. Right. We're an MMA organization. You know, we've kind of made, you know, I was a fighter for about 8 years, and there wasn't something like this, a platform to where young athletes can kind of, you know, gain the experience necessary to get on a, let's just say, a higher professional level, because there are some professional fights here. I care about, you know, martial arts in general. I was a wrestler my whole life, and I really think that wrestling kind of prepares you for a mixed martial arts career if you wanted to do that, or if you just like to compete and challenge yourself. Like, wrestlers kind of tend to gravitate towards, you know, when you just start competing enough, it just becomes a part of who you are. A lot of wrestlers kind of start moving towards jujitsu or other forms of competition. And then ultimately, like myself, just ended up fighting, which it's a sport, you know, but like MMA, but we just call it fighting. So
it's brutal.
And yeah, so our organization essentially wants to focus on new athletes and trying to make sure that you obviously can't pick and choose opponents, but for the most part, you want to have opponents on an equal playing field to have good opportunities. Well, other organizations, I don't believe, protect our athletes at all. And we want to make sure that our athletes have the best chance at kind of, you know, showcasing their skill sets and gaining the experience necessary. So.
Is it more like it's all about the fans that will come? For example, a bout is going to be, to put together a good bout, you want to draw in the most crowd kind of thing. And they're more focused on that rather than keeping it safe.
Right. We want to have good fights, but also, you know, Yuma comes out and supports Yuma. So we want to have Yuma against like people from outside of Yuma.
I see.
And that just seems to be a winner. At least it has in the past. I'm not the matchmaker, believe it or not. I just kind of like oversee what the matches are. But that's kind of the philosophy behind the matchmaking, is just he wants to put Yuma boys against outsiders that are, of course, similar skill sets.
So Yuma Fight League, is this your organization?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I mean, I have partners, and my partners are all kind of at the same common purpose. We just, we have the intention of providing that platform and making sure that the fights are exciting for Yuma. And, you know, we call it a community event, but it kind of seems to be focused on fight fans, really, you know, not necessarily families, but there are, like, you know, like I said, wrestlers and I just combat sports people show up.
So you mentioned they're not necessarily professional fights. What makes something professional? I mean, this looks pretty professional. It's got like a flyer, graphic arts here. This is this looks real right here.
So we have an athletic commission in Arizona, the Arizona Boxing and MMA Commission, and they actually determine if a fight's an amateur or professional. So they sanction every bout that we put up to them. They approve them, deny them. We have to justify them with videos and records and other forms of competition. So they do the sanctioning or the approving. And then once a fighter has, let's say, 5 amateur bouts, then we can petition for them to become a professional and pay them and against to fight another professional.
So what makes this, so the word Yuma Fight League, that could be both amateur fights and it could be both professional fights.
So in this, on this fight card on August 2nd, I believe we only have 3 professional fights and then roughly 12 amateur bouts.
Do you know these guys?
I do.
Yeah. Are these all?
A couple of them are my boys that I raised up and then.
Really?
Yeah. But the other guys are all, you know, from the area or from Yuma themselves.
Sure. Proper.
Yeah.
Any from Mexico?
I think one is from Mexico on there.
That's cool.
Aldana's, he's from Mexicali, yeah.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. We got some guys coming. That's awesome. And so you mentioned you'd done this for 8 years and you survived.
Well, no, it's when I fought pro for 8 years, but I've been coaching and fighting since 2006 is when I opened an MMA gym here in Yuma MMA.
Jeez.
And so that was the first MMA gym in Yuma, and I was the first professional fighter to fight in Yuma, which was in a little show over at Cocopa Casino called Total Combat. I think I made $500.
Did you win? That's all.
I did win. Okay. And then the next night I fought in Tijuana, Mexico for, I think, $500. And,
did you win?
I did.
Dang, undefeated, man, right off the bat.
I did not win them all, but I did win those ones. And it was an exciting time for me. And a lot of people kind of, you know, wonder why or what exactly that was about. And it's kind of, you know, going back, I was 25 years old. Actually, I was close to 29 years old when I started fighting, kind of weird. I didn't have a family or anything like that. So it was kind of easy for me. And that's something I like.
You weren't married at the time?
I was not, no.
Aaron wasn't
Actually, the next year, 30. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, we had Kennedy at 30. So yeah, right around 29. So it was all kind of happening at the same time when I was getting married, fighting. You know, the family wasn't there yet. So I think Erin let me, she knew who I was when she married me. I like to take on challenges. Yeah, I was rough. I was very rough. Yeah. And, you know, I had 2 brothers and that's what we did. My father raised us boxing and then end up dropping us off at a wrestling camp. And then I just kept wrestling. I've always loved wrestling.
How was growing up? Do you feel like your dad ruled with an iron fist or?
My parents were a tough love, you know, kind of people, but very loving. Had a great upbringing, but they were very, you know, I guess a purpose driven mindset. They wanted to make sure that when we were going to do something and whatever we did, we were going to do the best we could. And so we all kind of had that understanding, and we basically said, "What are you going to do? I don't know. You need to do something." And so kind of, you know, always. Always the thought process. And just for me, when I fell into wrestling, I just said, I'm going to be a champ. I'm going to go to college and I'm going to be a wrestling coach for the rest of my life. That's really what I thought, even when I was in high school. But that kind of didn't turn on real serious until I was about 17. So I think my junior in high school, I got tired of losing because I was just getting my butt kicked. And then I gave my heart and soul into it at that time. Yeah, and then turned the corner.
I was going to ask when I just had this conversation with Sean Garner yesterday. Yeah. Sean, believe it or not, you look at him now, you know, it's like, you know, but he actually was a fantastic wrestler out of Idaho. He had a full scholarship.
Oh, I believe it. You could never tell.
Yeah. But he broke his neck his senior year out with friends. I think cliff diving. You remember, Martin? I don't remember the story. Maybe he was driving or something. And so everything went, you know, changed. But
injuries are tough.
We were talking about them. It's odd because I have my second oldest son, Christian. He wrestles at Gila Ridge and
I know him.
You're one of the coaches there. And he often will say before a match, like, that guy is so big, like he's ripped. And you know, you can just see like he's almost already defeated before he gets into the ring. Mm-hmm. And so Sean and I were talking about this yesterday the mental game. Right. What's the point where you finally tell yourself, why not me? Like, why can't I win this match as opposed to that kid? Yeah, I worked just as hard, right? And it sounds like maybe at 17, you kind of turned that on. You keyed in on that. What do you think?
I think so. I think I just decided to believe in myself. And I really think it's just kind of, you know, that's why competition is so critical. You just have enough matches where you start turning off that part of your brain that's trying to analyze what's going to happen, and you just go out and perform. And then you start doing well and surprising yourself even, and then beating guys that other people didn't think you could beat. And the next thing you know, you walk on the mat believing you can win every single time. I never, once that started happening to me, I never ever thought I could lose. And I did lose, but I always said I'm not losing again, and sure, I should not have lost. And I just kind of developed that mentality. And I do see a lot of wrestlers have that. It's kind of like false sense of capability, but we just are diehards. And because you've just trained so much, and you just have this, I don't know. It's just, it's a strong will, and you no matter what, you're going to bring it.
Yeah.
And I think around 17, 18, you're right. That is about a turning point, at least with my mentality.
That where you kind of, okay, I'm a champ.
Yeah. I'm going to out train everybody. And so I just felt like I was training so hard. No one could train as much as me. And so therefore I was going to win.
It reminds me of Michael Jordan's story. You remember him? Have you heard this? Right?
I don't remember his story.
I think he was cut from the high school basketball team.
Oh, yeah. I do.
And so he, instead of kind of like just giving up, he put in, you know, thousands of hours of free throws, and he just put in the work. He was going to outwork everybody, and that was a determining factor, because he wasn't the biggest guy.
Right.
And ultimately became the greatest there ever was. So it all comes down to that work ethic. Do you think that work ethic that you learned when you were growing up in wrestling and boxing and things, how has that translated now that you're an adult in your career? Because you're on the back end. You're almost done.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think it shaped me to, you know, set me up for success. You just learn to not accept, you know, well, you don't ever accept quitting, but you accept setbacks, but that's not the end of it. You just come back from them and you keep driving forward. So of course that applies to everything in life.
Yeah. How are your kids doing now? So Kennedy just graduated. She won the state championship, graduated. Mm-hmm. And I think I was at the graduation ceremony, and she had all sorts of regalia on. So she's pretty smart cookie. I don't know what all that meant, but
a straight A student, and we're very proud of her. So she's going to Kansas. Not sure it's the best idea, but she's going to try it, and she's going to go wrestle over there. She has a wrestling scholarship. And
what's your concern?
I feel like she's kind of turning the corner with her interest in wrestling.
What do you mean turning the corner? Like she's kind of distancing herself. That was, I'm done with it. Moving on.
She's less interested, less application. You know, she used to, at one time, was very, you know, focused on her skill sets, but now she's kind of more focused on other things. But we've all agreed that she's going to go and try it. She's going to get through that year and then reassess it. And that's kind of what I did in my freshman year in college. I wasn't happy with what was happening. You know, fight or flight, I wanted to quit, but absolutely couldn't tell my parents that I, you know, was going to quit. But, you know, talked to my brothers and ultimately stuck it out, and then ended up, you know, being very successful. But, and I tell my children these same stories, and Kenny's heard it. But also, if she decides that wrestling's not for her, then we're going to support her in that too. But she's going to make it through the year. I mean, I believe she can All-American her freshman year, but we'll just see. And not that accolades matter, but I do think you should have a goal. And, you know, well, the goal is a national championship. She's going to try for that, but she's come up short. We're All-American.
Sounds like the goal is...
It's a beautiful story.
The goal is a national championship for Dad, but not necessarily for Kennedy.
Exactly.
That's what it sounds like.
I try not to push these. But I mean, that, you know, that's... So I was a national champion my junior in college.
Wow.
And I felt like, well, I was the first national champion in the history of the college. I went to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. And so I felt like the man, and, you know, mission accomplished. And I do think that hurt me going into my senior year, where I stopped. I let my foot off the gas pedal just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Changed some of my training habits, and, you know, ultimately got beat my senior year. So that's a hard pill for me to swallow. But I think that actually drove me to continue with grappling and, you know, jiu-jitsu and boxing, and then ultimately, you know, competing and fighting in MMA.
Do you ever think of those matches still? Because I always find myself every once in a while, I'll be laying it at night and it'll pop into my head and I'll replay that match over and over again. Yeah,
no, without fail, I think that's how, you know, our kind of people are. And I do feel like it goes back to what we were talking about, when I never thought I should lose. I shouldn't have lost that. And if I had done X, Y, and Z, and how do I make sure that that never happens again? I wish I could get over those matches. I cannot.
I know.
This day.
It's the regret, right?
It's the same with the fights I've lost. I just can't. I can't stomach it.
I love it. I love it. Sean, you got any questions for Chance?
Yeah. So I wonder if you understand how hard of a decision it is for her in deciding whether or not to continue wrestling, and whether or not, like, how easy would it be or supportive would you really be if she decided not to continue wrestling? And the reason I ask this question is because I remember I tried to quit. Sounds like I'm a, you know, alcoholic or drug addict, you know? I had to quit so many times. And I couldn't. And I literally couldn't. I would stay home. I wouldn't go to practice. And my teammates would come and get me. And my coach would have a special counsel with, you know, the teammates and me, and then with me and him, and talk about me letting down myself, letting down the community, things that would plant it in a young person's mind that it was as if everybody was literally looking at me, and my success was buoying them up. And in reality, you know, the team could use a few extra team points, and then I filled a critical weight class. But it wasn't that big a deal. It was no big deal to the community. It was a little deal to the team, but enough for them to talk to me. And I wonder if my life would be different. And so I have essentially the opposite approach with my kids. And I don't know which one is right. I'm old enough to know now that I know nothing. And that's not what I tell my kids, and I tell my, you know, my law partner a lot. I know enough to know that I don't know anything, but I'm open to a good argument on any position. And when my kids got to that age where they started wrestling, they wanted to wrestle. They're like, hey, Dad, I want to wrestle. And I'm like, okay. So I take them to a tournament that they were totally unprepared for, let them get their face smashed into the mat a few times and tossed around. Yeah, that's what I thought. It's healthy. Hmm. And they're like, well, that wasn't very fun. I'm like, yeah, it's not very fun, is it? And like, well, if I trained real hard and got good, it'd be fun to win. I'm like, yeah, but there's, you know, there's a lot of training that's going on. Do you really have what it takes? Because I'm not going to babysit you. You got to do it on your own. And I'd really kind of put it out there that if they didn't have the fire themselves, they weren't going to do it. So I was the opposite of support. I was kind of the downer. And they didn't end up wrestling. They ended up doing other sports and, you know, just kind of having a more diversified background in high school. But for me, when I approach any new and hard task, I know that the confidence that I can accomplish it, whether it's, you know, building something new at my house or tackling a difficult litigation, or we don't do a ton of the litigation, but, you know, a legal issue here. When I have to dig down, I've got it. I do have the mental strength, and that's not just a cliche. I have mental strength to push through because of wrestling. And so I can see the good of it. And I can also see that it's very difficult to quit when your parents or your community think that you should continue. Right. And so I don't know what's right. And I'm not trying to say, well, maybe you ought to like take it a little easier on her. But I'm putting out there a different version, and just trying to maybe, I wonder if you understand how hard it is for her to make this decision.
I try to weigh, you know, being in her shoes, and ultimately Well, so, I mean, we have a kind of little competing philosophies, you know, about things like you were saying with wrestling. Like to me, I made Kennedy and Cannon wrestle and they didn't want to wrestle, but I kind of took a very, well, I felt it was like a functional side of it. Not only the mental toughness, but the physicality, the self-defense. Self-defense is a requirement, you know, like swimming, you know, you have to be able to swim. I believe you have to be able to defend yourself. And I thought wrestling kind of satisfied all those things. And now when it comes to her now in this point in our lives, which is what your point is, you know, I always told my kids, it's like, you will receive, we're not rich people. You receive a college scholarship. You will join the military or you will get a job and move out of the house. And those are your options. And so she's kind of going down this road. Was that ultimately like exactly the truth? Not really, but I did want them to strive for something. And I know that she's struggling with this and I'm not probably the best at supporting her if she was to deviate, I'll mm-hmm. be honest, but I am trying to mature as I get older and I am trying to kind of be more understanding. But
do you know what her alternatives, options and what her ambitions would be?
I think she could join the Border Patrol today and, you know, really? And yeah.
Well, sure. I mean, she could do that.
There's other jobs. That's, I mean, if she wanted to work. Do you know
what her dreams and ambitions are?
I mean, my daughter, I believe, wants to be a wife and a mother and raise a good family.
Okay.
Yeah. So I know that she will achieve those things, but so she wants to just...
If she found Mr. Right, mm-hmm. right off the bat,
yeah.
How hard is that pill for you to swallow?
I mean, I want her to find those things, so...
Ultimately.
Yeah, but I...
Yeah.
I'm not easily convinced that
that's good. That's a dad's job.
I'd hate to be that kid though that comes in the Chance's house.
Man, and I tell you what.
We'll see.
Hey, Dad.
We'll see.
I'm intimidated right now, and I'm not.
I'm intimidated.
So it's so interesting. No, I think there's been a lot of people that have come out and said, if you can make it through as a wrestler, you can do anything that you set your mind to. Obviously, there's limits, right? I'm never going to be the Michael Jordan that Adam was talking about because I don't have the frame. You know, I don't have the DNA that it takes to be the Michael Jordan. And you just, at some point, you've got to recognize that, right? I'm not going to be a Michael Phelps, right? I'm not going to be that swimmer. But most things in life, are just there's more grit to it than there is natural talent. I think it's Thomas Edison that said that it's 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. And I think that's 99% things in life. Whether she wants to be a heart surgeon, whether she wants to be a Border Patrol agent, whether she wants to be the best mom out there, it's all about her commitment and her willing to stick through the hard days to see those bright sunshine, you know, the sunrises. And the wrestling has shown her that because there isn't anything tougher.
Yeah, there's no shortcuts.
That one-on-one combat and getting, and you know, waking up at 5:30 in the morning, working hard, dieting, giving up your social life, working extra hard to get the good grades because you're exhausted at the end of the workout, and then going to the tournament and getting your face smashed into the mat. There's nothing harder than that.
You know, you said something earlier, which I agree with you, but you said something earlier about, you know, introducing your kids to wrestling when they're unprepared. I feel like there is so many lessons in that, and that's such a good strategy, you know, and then ultimately telling them, hey, well, if you did this, you could, mm-hmm. you could win. Because I feel like I protected my children from getting beat up on the wrestling mat because I would teach them wrestling early on. And I kind of like robbed them of the a lot of the beatings. Of course, they still get beat. But I kind of wonder if I had been a little bit too proactive and kind of not let them suffer those defeats to come back. I mean, it's happening. And of course, they're still getting beat. Everyone does. But I kind of like, you kind of plant a little seed there where maybe I should not.
I think as parents, I think that's the hardest thing is you watch your kids struggle and you want to fix it.
Right.
And that's at least for me as a dad, is the hardest thing for me to do is not fix it. Because I know how to fix it. I can fix it.
I need to be more like that.
No, it's very, very difficult. You have to let them, I mean, I'm saying this like I do it all the time, but I think it is better to let them struggle because through that struggle, they're going to learn. And if you take the struggle away, then mom and dad are always just there to bail me out.
I have more respect for the kids. You know, let's take Noah, for example. He's new to wrestling. Mm-hmm. I have so much respect for kids who are going in there, getting beat up. The other kids have so much more experience, and then they just keep coming. And, you know, I'm a tough love guy. I'll throw out my opinion here and there, but I don't really kind of give too much of my time if I don't think that the kids are in the grind.
Yeah.
But I do see these boys and they're working hard, and I just have so much respect for the kids that are just learning and they're behind and they're trying to catch up. And it's just, but my kids kind of know it. So I'm almost like a little envious because I think that they're building the right character that maybe kids that are better kind of don't really have that grind. Their grind is a little bit different. It's a little bit, you know, smoother path.
Yeah. And some kids, here's something that we have seen again and again in trying to hire people in a professional setting where they've been naturally talented intellectually, and maybe they're good looking and they've had an easier path in life. Maybe their parents were a little more affluent, and so they made it through school just fine, and they feel like success is just their destiny. And they come to work with us, and we have a very high standard, and we expect them to learn. We don't expect them just to be a cog in a piece of machinery. We want them to learn, to think analytically, and then whatever level they're at, we're going to take it to the next level, and we're going to say, okay, now we need you to do this project. And it seems like the kids that have had a little bit of an easier life and coasted and been the popular kid in school struggle with that. And the kids that have had a more difficult life, maybe grew up in a single parent home and things were tough, maybe there wasn't always food in the fridge, and we've hired quite a few people and we've seen a lot of backstories, they know how to survive. They're survivors, and so they will put it in and they will learn and grow, and they become real performers. And that there's a stereotype for everybody, and it doesn't carry across the board. But the fight that is necessary to succeed in life is real. Whether you learn it in a sport or whether you learn it at home because there's a struggle there, there needs to be that right level of opposition nonetheless. And so when parents take away the opposition, they're robbing them of the opportunity for them to grow mentally and know that they can do hard things. But at the same time, obviously we want kids to be in a healthy environment where they say, okay, here's the opposition. I'm going to give you just enough to where you fail without putting in the amount that you don't know you have yet. And I'm going to help extract that out of you. That's what we do as a parent to create great kids, that you do as a coach to create great athletes. And those kids that you see that are a little smoother, mm-hmm. and they win 75% of their matches without even really, you know, training that hard, I think those kids are the harder kids to make champions, because it's like you gotta feel the real hurt in order to get to the next level.
I think you're right. And you did remind me also, I do think that I would tell my, well, I didn't tell my kids, but my wife would talk about it. It's like, why, if they don't want to wrestle, they don't have to. And I said, these kids aren't starving. This is the adversity that they have to have to make it. So that was kind of the selling point that she understood. It's like, okay, this is going to be tough. And so, yeah, it's exactly. Mm-hmm. Can't replicate it. It's tough. And then it does, you know, can replicate life where things are not going to go smooth.
Of course, you're a wrestling family, but tell me Aaron's background.
I mean, in sports or in just...
In sports and in wrestling in particular. I mean, she married a wrestler, so I wonder if she knew what she was getting into.
I don't think she did at all. She did not know what she was getting into. So my wife, she kind of had a rough upbringing. She had, she came from a, you know, a divorced home, and was kind of, her mom moved out of state and she was living with her mother, and then she'd live with her father, and she lived with her grandma, and she had six other siblings, and
so she had her own fight.
She had
her
a ton of adversity
that
has molded her into an extremely strong person. And so yeah, I have nothing, you know, I don't, my life was not like hers. My parents are still alive and together, and, you know, we never had that type of adversity at home. So
did you already explain where you grew up and what your childhood was like?
I mean, I'm a Yuma boy, and I did talk about my parents were kind of tough love. They just, you know, I think a purpose-driven mindset. We just had to do something, and whatever it was, we're going to give it our all. And that was just kind of, that was just always impressed upon us. My parents, my mother in particular, forced us to do gymnastics until we were 12 years old. None of us wanted to go. She forced us every day, every practice. But I, you know, looking back on it, and that's kind of maybe one of the reasons why it's acceptable for me to force my kids is, looking back on it, I'm super grateful. I could do things that no other kids could do. All through high school, I was very, very, you know, physically capable and body awareness. And so I think when I started wrestling, just helped me be.
Gymnastics and wrestling seem to go glove in hand.
Exactly. Wrestling is gymnastics. So
leotard and the singlet.
Well, that, so when they, that's when I got.
You're like, oh, dude, I love this.
The stretchy right pants. All right.
I didn't like either of those outfits for the record.
Yeah. You see the who's number one, where they're wrestling in, you know, just basically a shirt and a t-shirt and shorts. And it's like, why don't we just do that? Or you watch UFC, you know, and they're wrestling in just shorts. And it's like,
I know why. So we were wrestling. This was before a tournament, and I was notorious for being lazy, and my coach would just always get on me for that. And this was later.
What they call
on.
You Game Day Hansen or something?
That's what they call, game time Hansen. And so we're getting ready. Like all the other team, there was one particular team. Like I hated them anyway. Like there's just a bunch of like we're better than you kind of people, you know, it's Thatcher. And they were down on the mat before a tournament, all warming up and stuff, and they're full on. Back in those days, it was the 90s, and so they had full on, like, we had warm-ups, you know, so they had long sleeves, long things, and they were like actually insulated.
Yeah.
And these guys were rolling around down there and doing moves, and one of the guys planted his hand. He was doing a reversal, and his hand stayed there, and when his body went, and so it twisted his whole arm, just dislocated the whole thing. It was gnarly. And I was like, see, coach, that's why we don't wrestle down there right now. We just get on the mat and do what we got to do. We don't have to warm up. But that's why we don't wear shorts and a t-shirt, because it gets all gnarled up and twisted.
Well, I know, but, you know, they've got the tight-fitting shirts, you know.
Compression stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
There's. I think the state of California authorized those as their official uniform.
Who did?
California.
California? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, shorts and those compression shirts.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're changing. It seemed like the rules were stagnant, and so was the style of wrestling for a long time, from, say, the 70s to the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And then it started to change. People started trying new things. When I grew up, it was always fundamentals, fundamentals, fundamentals. Right. You might see a few cool moves in college, or especially the Olympics when other countries got involved. But it was basically your typical stance, your typical shot, your follow through. And now I don't watch a match, especially I watched Final X just recently. I watched Fargo. These kids are doing things that I never seen. I never even thought of. And I think YouTube has a big part to do with it, but also the mentality that, hey, there are no rules unless it's illegal. And we're going to do it unless it's legal. And so these holds and these throws and the funk roll, you know, you want to describe for our audience what the funk roll is? Because that was something that came up that I think in the past 5-6 years that became very popular and has actually proven to be a tremendous defense against the shot.
Right. Yeah. So funk roll is just a leg pass. But so scrambling is a fundamental now. And scrambling was not a fundamental back when I was wrestling, probably all of our same time. And like you said, it was actually, so I was introduced to the funk roll, I think my junior in college, and it came from California. One of the guys on the team, this is what he did. He showed, and then we all started doing it even then. But I think I 100% agree with you. The innovation that's kind of taken control of the sport has uprooted the fundamentals that we thought were the fundamentals. Those fundamentals are actually very easily defeated now with other fundamentals.
Yeah.
You know, the rolls and the scrambles and, you know, these far ankle series where when guys are, you know, knowledgeable about where to hold positions from, it's the positions is still fundamental, but the way to get to the positions has changed.
Did you watch the Jax Forrest and Vito Arrujo series in Final X? Mm-hmm. Like, that was a new version of wrestling.
Yeah.
They're super fast. They know all the general moves, but there is no rules as far as those two go. Like, they're going to always be scrapping until the points are awarded. And even after, they're going to keep going. And it's, I'd hate to be a ref these days, because when they're rolling and the takedown isn't as nearly as certain,
yeah.
Because before it was like, okay, somebody's got a double leg on me. If I start heading towards the mat, I'm bellying out and there's a takedown. Now it's like, that's just the first of a series of a whole bunch of tumbling that's going to happen. Yeah. And as a ref, it's like, where is the control and where do we award the points? I know we're talking a lot about wrestling. Probably a minority of our audience is wrestling, but it's such a fun sport that I think is just evolving to the point where it hasn't drawn the crowds historically, but now I think it has the potential to, because it's so much more fun to watch.
I hope so.
It's more lively. There's a lot more action, and the rule changes. The NCAA, high school, they're willing to change the rules to create and incentivize a more attack-driven match.
Mm-hmm. You think this, like Yuma Fight League here, as Sean's talking, I'm thinking, I wonder if MMA has had a lot to do with that, or fighting, like you're talking about,
I think
bringing wrestling onto the scene.
Yeah, I did.
My boys have often said, they always tell me, Dad, the best MMA fighters are wrestlers.
They are.
Like, they began as wrestlers. And I'm like, okay, you're just saying that. But as they started to show me over time, like, oh, I can see that, how a lot of the best fighters in MMA and stuff are come from wrestling backgrounds or jiu-jitsu in some way.
Well, a lot of people, and that's usually the question, because grappling, you know, has kind of proven itself to be superior to striking in its foundation, or when all things being equal, right? The grappler will beat the striker most of the time. And it comes to wrestling versus jiu-jitsu. Well, jiu-jitsu is advanced wrestling. There's less rules. There's more capabilities. Then why is it that the wrestlers seem to do better at fighting? You know, wrestlers, and this is my argument because I've seen it a million times, is you can't replicate the intensity of wrestling growing up, and you can't replicate the physicality that's required to be a champion in wrestling. And so when you have those things,
why
they easily can
why
transition.
Though?
It's just, there's so much more athleticism involved, you know, than just sitting there doing, like, the amount, the explosiveness required to be a high level wrestler.
Yeah.
You have to become an athlete to do those things. You can't just be very skilled.
Mm-hmm.
Jiu-jitsu, you can be very skilled. Doesn't mean that they don't have strength, but they don't have full body control like it would be required for gymnastics, for example. You have to be explosive. You have to have power. Jiu-jitsu doesn't require those things. And so when a wrestler learns the jiu-jitsu, they're dominant. And it's the same with pretty much striking. Wrestlers can knock people out because we're explosive.
You know, and there was something that I heard, there was an interview the other day, and it was when a wrestler transitioned. He was several time NCAA champion. His mind escapes me right now, but he actually wrestled against Kyle Dake in the last Final X, not this one, but in the last Final X.
You say he's a fighter?
He's just transitioning into fighting now. He wrestled, yes, and he wrestled Kyle Dake in the Final X, not this year, but last year. Got brown hair, buzzed head. Anyway, what he said, you'll come up with the name, I'm sure. What he said was, it was the thing that was the most bizarre to him when he transitioned to fighting and to grappling was the tap out. He's like, I'd rather pass out than tap out.
Was it Nolf?
Yes, it was Nolf.
Yeah.
Jason Nolf, right?
Nolf, yeah.
Yes.
He'd rather tap out than pass out.
No, he'd rather pass out than tap out. He's like, tap out? Who taps out? That taps out is not an option in wrestling. The ref is never looking for a tap,
right.
You know? And you get choked pretty hard.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'd rather my arm get broken than tap out. He's like, it's all in. It's all or nothing type thing. And so that mentality when I got into fighting was like, I don't understand. I'm going in to win. I'm not going in to see if someone can get me in an awkward position where it hurts real bad or I'm about to pass out. Yeah. Like if that happens, it happens, but I'm going to try to make sure it's that guy.
Yeah. That's a diehard mentality. I love it. But I know firsthand that injuries is going to happen if you don't have kind of, I'm sure in training, I mean, he's learned to tap out.
It's probably because jiu-jitsu does focus on positions that can break your limbs, whereas right. wrestling, those are illegal.
Right. So you have to kind of adopt that like understanding of the lines of, you know, when your body is definitely going to break. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And I think when it comes to joints, that's the thing that makes me, you watch MMA and stuff. It's all awesome. I love it until it gets to the point where if you don't submit, your arm's going to break. And it's
yeah.
Like, I don't want to see that.
And it is hard to, because you're essentially quitting, right? And then the wrestlers, yes. we don't quit. So, so learning to give up, it's not an option in wrestling, and it's hard to wrap your brain around it.
That's what the thing
it is. And he's like, so right. And he's good enough. That guy's good enough to probably, you know, hold on to that philosophy a lot longer than most people. But yeah, that's a short career if you don't ever tap.
Yeah, well, I think losing consciousness is not as big a deal.
Yeah,
to me,
chokes is not a big deal. Yeah, I'm saying like, with the arms and knee bars.
Have my elbow hyperextended. Like, that's not fun.
Yeah, I tapped out to a choke before, and I still to this day can't get over it.
Yeah.
I just can't get over it. I truly put myself back in those moments, and I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know why I just said, oh, he's got me. I quit.
Let it go.
I quit in the middle of the fight. I kind of got slammed on my head, and I was a little, you know, disheveled or disoriented, and the fight was still going. I felt like I was recovering, and then he got my back and he's choking me. And I kind of just said, he's got me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't forgive myself.
But he probably did have you.
He
right?
probably did. But what, I mean, I watch it and I go, you know what? I could have gotten out. I could have done this.
Oh, you watch it.
Yeah. Oh, I watch it. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it was for the world championship.
Really? It was for a world championship.
Yeah. I would have been the world champ had I just figured that out or not given up.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard pill to swallow, but.
But those matches can turn so quick. I mean, you could be dominating and then all of a sudden lose position and it's over. Like, it happens so fast in MMA. I see it time and time again. We got to wrap up, man.
Okay.
Already?
It's been so fast, right?
Yeah, I did.
But before we do that, I want to plug this one more time. Your fight league here. Yuma Fight League. You've got this fight coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Three fights, it looks like, right? Am I reading that right, or six?
Yeah, there's 15 fights. Those are ex-UFC guys from the area that are coming to do a meet and greet at the weigh-in. The weigh-in's on Friday at the fairgrounds.
These are the poster childs, right?
Yeah, the poster childs.
When is it?
Well, Friday is the weigh-in, and then it's a meet and greet with the UFC guys. There's Hall of Famer, Kelvin Gastelum, Edgar Garcia's from Yuma. Well, he's Summerton Boy.
Friday, what date?
Bunch of wrestlers. Friday, 6 to 8.
August 1st.
Yeah, August 1st.
Friday, August 1st from 6 o'clock to 8 p.m. And the best part? There's going to be a food truck.
Yeah, there's a food truck.
Did
and then Saturday is the fights. I did know
you
that.
You didn't know that?
Okay. I don't know what the food
who's
truck
who's paying for
is.
The food truck? You're like, who authorized the food truck?
Not me.
This guy.
Not me.
Okay. Why?
I mean, we have a lot of people that kind of add to the event. And Chance, you want a food truck? Get a food truck. That's
the bring the people.
that's my interest in it.
That
yeah, get a,
people,
oh, yeah
dude.
Get a food truck.
There's food there? We're going.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is August 1st from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Come see the fights, right?
Yeah, and the fights are the second. They start at, the grappling starts around 4 o'clock, and we have wrestling matches. My son's actually going to wrestle the Summerton coach, Sanchez, who's a real good wrestler.
Is that right? Awesome.
How old is your son?
He's 17 now, yeah.
He's a junior this year?
Mm-hmm. And the Summerton coach?
That's 20.
Oh, okay. So this kid's still, he's not this old 40-year-old that's going
in. Are you
nervous
about Summerton this year? They are building quite the machine out there, I hear.
They are. We went out to practice a few weeks ago, and they had quite a few kids.
Yeah.
So the numbers game is real. You know, just Shark Tank, throw them together, see who comes out on top.
Yeah.
It'll be a good season
this
year.
That's awesome. I can't wait to go.
We're a tough team. We're a tough team.
Though. I know we are.
So Friday, August 1st, mm-hmm. and Saturday, August 2nd is the
actual event, correct?
I'll be there.
Yeah, we'd love to have you. If you need anything from me, you just ask and you'll get it.
Sean's going to pay for the food truck. Oh. As long as you put our Decent Garner and Hanson all over that thing.
No, life, death, and the law.
Life. Oh, yeah, whatever.
That's
either one.
Well, I appreciate it, gentlemen. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming in and good luck out there. stay safe till at least retirement.
You're still fighting?
No, absolutely not. No.
Okay, all right.
I barely get on the wrestling mat. I barely walk.
Okay, that's awesome. Good talking to you.
Pleasure.